Tres Hombres is open 7 days a week. We're also made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters, of course, and by State Farm Insurance agent Chris Gridham, providing all types of insurance, including auto, home, life, and business. A longtime Chico resident and CSU alum, Chris is dedicated to the people he serves in the community. You can reach Chris Gridham by calling 809-1197, that's 809-1197, or stopping by at 1450 Mangrove in Chico. So with no further ado, let's get to our intro music and start the show.
We talking about practice. Not a game, not a game, not a game. We talking about practice. It's easy to sum it up. We just talk about practice. I mean, listen, we talking about practice. I mean, how silly is that, man? We talking about practice. We talking about practice, man.
Indeed, this is Talking About Practice. Jarrell Gilbert in here. Jonathan Newberry. Noobs is in the building. What's up?
What's
Noobs?
Up? I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Nice. I'm not having to search for firewood to keep my house warm every day, as you were just explaining off air. So
it's brutal.
Yeah, it's been chilly, man.
Yeah, it's been chilly. Definitely. But it's cool, man. That's country living, you know?
No doubt. No doubt. You're up in the hills. So.
I'm up in the hills. It's not even that it's that far, but it's like, there's like a 5 degree temperature drop.
Oh, and that's significant, you know? When we're in the 30s,
oh, yeah,
for sure.
For sure. Yeah. I got some 5 gallon buckets that were full of water, and the last couple mornings I've had a nice little sheet of ice on them.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah,
nice.
It's been below freezing up there, just trying to stay warm and, yeah, stay connected. I lost my internet for 2 days up there.
Oh, so you were off the grid.
I was literally off the grid, yeah. So no phone, no internet, which kind of sucks, but, you know. It's cool, though. I like it up there.
Yeah, no doubt.
It snowed the other day.
Oh, no kidding?
Yeah, and actually stuck to the ground for like 2 hours.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. That sounds nice.
Some solitude up there.
Yeah.
I dig it.
No, it's cool. My girlfriend likes it up there, and my dog loves it.
Yeah.
Plenty of space for him to run around.
Awesome.
So, yeah, and it's like, you know, 15 minutes from town, so.
There you go.
Pretty chill.
Nice, man. Yeah. Well, we have a big show. Want to talk about the New York Giants. They are kind of looking somewhat reminiscent of the Super Bowl teams of yesteryear. Obviously, Dallas had a big win that could have gone the other way. Gus Bradley gets fired. Osweiler gets benched. Cleveland, the fans of the Cleveland Browns may throw a parade if they go 0-16. So I want to get into that. Also, get to some hoop talk, discuss some hoops and both college and NBA. But I wanted to start with Green Bay. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is from Chico. Mm-hmm. And by the way, shouts to PV, who won the state championship in basketball.
Wow.
Yeah. Wait, was it basketball?
It had to be football.
Football,
right?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Football, yeah. Aaron Rodgers gave him a speech. Yeah. Basketball is just now starting, so I should know that. So shouts to them for winning the state championship in football. Let me get that correct. But I did want to start with Green Bay, obviously, because of the local connection. A lot of people are curious or interested in what goes on with that team. Either they're cheeseheads or they're just huge Aaron Rodgers fans. And I thought yesterday's game was interesting because Green Bay had a 17-point lead,
mm-hmm,
that they more or less gave away,
right,
to the Bears. I thought it was interesting that the Bears on third or fourth and goal didn't go for it there,
mm,
to take the lead and possibly win the game. Because let's face it, they're not
going anywhere.
They're not playing it for anything.
No.
And they've been a nice story with Matt Barkley kind of taking the reins as quarterback. And I mean, look, it seems obvious that everyone in Chicago, or most everyone who roots for the Bears, was kind of over Jay Cutler and his tenure there.
No doubt.
And I can't blame him. Jay Cutler has been if nothing else, he has been consistently inconsistent.
Right.
And I think, you know, we always talk about his arm, or maybe not us, but, you know, Talking Heads will talk about his arm strength and all that kind of stuff. And I think that that's an interesting, I don't know, it's been an interesting tenure for him. And but I think it's over. I think the emergence of Matt Barkley over the past few games has put Chicago in a new direction, which is great for them. But they're still not a very good team.
No.
And Green Bay had to scratch and claw to get themselves back in the game. And I don't know what they're doing with that coverage with Jordy Nelson down the field. We know he's their best wide receiver. Mm-hmm. So maybe double him, because the only thing you can't do is give up a 60-yard bomb there.
Right.
You give up a 25-yarder, they still got to go another 25, 30 yards to get in field goal range. The one thing you can't do is let Jordy Nelson slip by you.
Right.
And they did.
Yeah.
So that was...
That's the difference between, you know, a 5-9 team and, you know, somebody that's actually going to, like, be playing for something in December. I mean, that's kind of been the Bears thing all year long, dude, is, like, these close defeats. It's kind of been that way for a couple of years now. You know, I don't know what's going on in Chicago. It feels like they don't really even have... Like, it'd be one thing if you were, say, going to get the top draft pick.
Yeah.
Or you had a bunch of picks coming up in the next few drafts.
Right.
Which they really don't. You know, and I don't know if Matt Barkley is exactly the answer.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's been nice to at least have the opportunity now where they've been out of it for so long that they've given him a good look.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just kind of throwing him the wolves the last couple
right.
weeks of the season. You know what I mean? Because I think for these kids, it takes like a few starts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
At this level to actually be able to, you know, see what they can do. As far as Cutler's future, I mean, God, I don't know. He feels like he's been in the league at least, like, what, 10 years now?
Yeah.
You know, played with Denver for a minute, and, you know, he's had a long tenure there with Chicago. I mean, like you said, like you referred to, everybody always talks about his arm, his mm-hmm. big arm.
And
he does
arm
have
shape,
a big arm.
Yeah,
and he
right.
does. And he can make every throw, you know what I mean? No matter what hash they're starting on, he can do, you know, 25-yard outs to the opposite side of the field.
Exactly.
He can get it there. A lot of guys can't, or just, you know, choose not to be that type of gunslinger, mm-hmm. you know, to take chances. He kind of reminds me of Jeff George in that
yeah.
regard.
You know, that's a great mean? Call. That's
he
a great
can
comparison.
Bomb it,
right.
But, you know, and he's had some good teams. I mean, they were in the NFC Championship game against Green Bay, I feel like, a few years ago.
Yeah.
And Green Bay won the Super Bowl. And then there were some questions about Cutler's toughness. Remember, he got injured.
He got
and never
injured
came back
right.
into the game.
And then it ended up being an MCL or ACL. It was something semi-serious. It wasn't.
No, it was a legit injury.
Right.
But it just shows you that, like, guys in the locker room and just that there's a general perception about him that he didn't,
yeah.
like, lay it out all on the line for the team. You know what I mean? So I feel like he's probably never had that locker room.
Yeah, and he just has one of those punchable faces, you know, where it just,
yeah.
he looks disinterested all the time. A great story that I've heard about Jay Cutler that he has not confirmed or denied is he's in the men's restroom, and this has nothing to do with anything except it's an awesome story. He's in the men's restroom, and as celebrities have to put up with from time to time, a fan walked into the urinal next to him and starts telling him, you know, I was a huge fan of yours at Vanderbilt and blah, blah, blah. And as yeah. he's saying it, Jay Cutler tilted his head back and just said, "Don't care." But that seems to kind of be his
yeah.
general demeanor towards everything. And I just think football is one of those sports where we demand to see your passion. You know, when
right.
someone like Brady erupts at Julian Edelman on the sideline, we don't look at him like a madman or, you know, this guy needs to chill out. We look at him like, oh, look at that fire, look at that passion. And I think as the quarterback, we have come to expect that.
Mm-hmm.
And just not everyone's that, you know,
right.
just because your skill set is that of a quarterback does not mean you're a natural born leader.
Yeah, I mean, we just saw this whole thing come up with Ray Lewis making comments about Joe Flacco.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Lewis is retired now. He's been retired for a few years, but he won a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco.
Right.
You know, and Joe Flacco had, like, I think 11 touchdowns and to zero interceptions that postseason. I mean, clearly was not like a Trent Dilfer situation where they just handed the ball off and played great defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was not, I mean, they had a good defense, but I mean, Joe Flacco was a major part of that.
Oh, yeah.
And Ray Lewis made some comments that he didn't have that kind of fire.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have have that kind of intensity, and that's why maybe he wasn't having as much success lately. I mean, I couldn't disagree. I mean, I'm not Ray Lewis. I'm not in that locker room.
Sure.
Ray Lewis, obviously a very emotional guy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Pumped up his team, you know, with dancing and just, you know, pregame speeches and all that. Like, you know, great locker room guy. But to your point, I think, like, we expect quarterbacks to be natural born leaders because they're playing that position. But it's like you've got point guards in the NBA who are very, like, kind of subdued, quiet guys.
Right.
Like Rajon Rondo comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not a real vocal guy. You know what I mean? But, like, just when it comes to, like, calling the plays and getting it done, that's really what matters. And, I mean, I would take Joe Flacco any day of the week.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. I mean, he's not Brady, and he's
not. Of course.
But, I mean, he gets it done. I mean, I think they've only missed the playoffs like twice in his career.
Yeah, they have been pretty consistently great since John Harbaugh got there,
actually.
And John, speaking of John's, John just arrived. John, why don't you introduce yourself to the people?
Awesome. Thank you. It's John Luke in here.
John Luke, what's happening, brother?
Just hanging out, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, speaking of Joe Flacco, I think he is a great example here for what we're talking about. When Ray Lewis comes out and says, you know, he wasn't that fiery, passionate kind of guy. And I don't know that that is necessarily a requirement from the quarterback position.
Right.
Because in Joe Flacco's situation, when they won that Super Bowl, you had vocal leaders like Ray Lewis, for example, like an Ed Reed, even like Terrell Suggs, for example. All those guys, and that's on the defensive side of the ball,
right.
But they definitely had that. And from what I understand, I mean, despite what you may think about Ray Rice, and we all saw the elevator tape, but what he was to that team as far as a vocal leader, from what I understand, he was very vocal and he was kind of the leader on that side of the ball.
Right.
So I don't know that that's necessarily a prerequisite, but I know that if you're a quarterback and you're struggling, that's something that's super easy to point to.
Absolutely.
This guy's not a leader. You know, this
right.
guy's not passionate. This guy doesn't care. And I think that's kind of been what's plagued Jay Cutler through his career, is he just has that face of, I'm completely disinterested. But I feel like he would make that face while he sees his firstborn being,
right.
you know, coming into this world.
That's just,
I just think that's
sour
his demeanor,
face. Yeah,
right.
Totally.
So, but I do want to talk on Green Bay's side of things in that game. I find it interesting that it seems that a lot of the media today, I was looking at an article on ESPN.com that was talking about winners and losers from this past weekend, and they're talking about how much momentum that Green Bay is currently carrying.
Yeah, four-game winning streak, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know how much I believe in momentum, because I think each game is kind of its own entity in of itself, you know, and it's, so it's hard to say, oh, this team's real hot. Is this team really hot, or have they just won a string of, you know what I'm saying?
No, it's not like baseball when you reel off 9 in 10 days
right.
or something like that. You're playing every week and once a week, no more than that. And so you're right that everything kind of happens in a vacuum.
Exactly.
And honestly, if you look at the schedule of teams that they've played, you know, I mean, I don't like, yeah, it's been relatively easy. I think, I mean, the Dallas win was big.
Sure.
You know, that was big. That was a game, too. They were a 3-point dog at home. So I kind of felt like they were, you know, maybe feeling, I don't know how much these guys pay attention to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is generally when you, like, even if you're not checking the line, but you know that you're the underdog, you know what I mean? Like, Green Bay should never really be an underdog at home.
Sure.
I mean, they had to be terrible.
Are you talking about the Seattle win?
I'm sorry. Did I say Dallas?
Yes.
I meant Seattle.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I rolled with it.
No.
I wanted to see where you were going.
No, thank you for correcting me, because that's, No, it was the Seattle win.
And that was kind of a weird game. That wasn't a stereotypical Seahawks performance. That was the first game that they, after the injury to Earl Thomas, where we now know he's on IR, he's out the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And Russell Wilson threw five picks, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I would.
Some of those weren't his fault, though.
No, absolutely.
Some of those were right off the dome, you know, right off hands. Right into other, you know, DBs. So you got to kind of look at receivers on that end.
Exactly.
Cold weather, whatever it may have been. But
and that's why I'm saying I think that game you got to kind of take with a grain of salt, because I don't think that if those two teams were to meet up and play that game again, I think that would be the one out of 100 times that you see a performance like that. It was just kind of a fluky game.
It was. And I mean, you look at these past four wins, though, like, I mean, they've kind of been in playoff mode this whole time.
Yes.
Because they were 4-6, right?
Right.
And now they're 8-6. So it's like they've been kind of playing with their backs against the wall, but that doesn't necessarily mean that A, they're hot, or B, that they're dangerous.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like now with Detroit losing yesterday to the Giants, they have a chance to tie them because I believe they play Detroit either next week or this
last game of the season.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that very well could be for the NFC North division title.
Yes, it most likely will be. It most likely will be no matter how things shake out.
If Green Bay loses this weekend and Detroit wins, then they'd be two back and they couldn't catch
them. No, that's right.
But they do own the tiebreaker right now because they won the first game in Green Bay. So if they keep pace with them and then win, then Green Bay gets the division.
Yeah, so that would be interesting. I would imagine Green Bay will go into that game 3-point favorites, something like that.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be close, though.
Detroit's one of those teams where it's just like you can't trust them. That game's in Detroit.
In Detroit, yeah.
You know.
And I just... You can't trust them. I mean, have we ever... This team is, what, 9 and... I don't have it in front of me. I should have it in front of me.
They're 9-5.
9-5.
They're 9-5.
And they could easily have lost 8 of those 9.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like a lot of those games, the Indianapolis game, I mean, they've had a lot of tight games this year. A lot of 3-point victories. I mean, they barely beat the Bears at home.
Right.
You know, it's just like... You know, and the Giants handled them pretty well. I don't know how bad Stafford's finger is.
Right.
Apparently
he's wearing that glove and broken, is it index finger?
I think it's index on his throwing hand.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not used to throwing with a glove, then all of a sudden now mid-season, towards the end, you got to start wearing it. It's going to definitely mess with your accuracy.
Yeah, so the AFC North, that'll be interesting. Can you believe the Vikings were the last undefeated team earlier this season?
Yeah, 5-0.
Yeah, and it's just been... kind of tough sledding for them ever since. But I did want to discuss the New York Football Giants. It looks like I don't know. I don't want to say they're in the exact same mode as they were those 2 years when they went to the Super Bowl. And I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth, so forgive me here. But I just said I don't know how much I believe in momentum, and I don't know that your past seasons. Look, this is a completely different team. I believe Michael Strahan was playing on one of those – he was on one of those Super Bowl teams, if not both. He was on the first one for sure.
He was on the one where they beat the Patriots, the undefeated Patriots team.
Yes, yes. And then okay, that's right. So it's not as if this is the same cast of characters. This is a completely new team.
Different coach.
Right. But it does just have a little, there's something about what the Giants are doing lately where they don't do anything that really impresses me. But they keep reeling off wins, and that's kind of what they were doing that year. The last two times when they got in as the sixth seed, I believe, they had to go on the road and win all road playoff games to get to the Super Bowl and then end up winning the Super Bowl. And they just have a similar vibe. And again, if this weren't the Giants, I probably wouldn't be saying it, right?
Right.
I wouldn't be comparing, if Green Bay was looking like this, I don't think I would say, oh, this is the Giants of past. I think because they wear the same uniforms, it's easy to make that comparison. But it does, I cannot help but draw those comparisons because those two teams, as you remember, struggled much of the regular season. I don't remember if it was the first time.
They were 9-7, I think.
Right, right,
Barely, they had to go on the road to Tampa Bay, and then the second run, they had to beat Green Bay, a 15-1 Green Bay team.
That's right.
So, they've been doing it with defense. They've been, their defensive ends getting pressure on the quarterback. And that's the only way they were able to handle Tom Brady twice.
Yeah.
They were in his face from the very first snap. I remember they got a safety in the second Super Bowl.
That's right.
Which
kind of
right in the first drive, I think. They were down 2-0. It was kind of had just a weird feeling to the whole thing. You'd figure that the Patriots' high-powered offense would be able to get it done at least one of those times. But they've got the formula. It's you're on base as far as I'm concerned with this analogy because it's basically the same formula. It's not Tom Coughlin, but I mean, basically, it's the defense and then Eli not making too many mistakes.
Right.
I think, from the wide receiver perspective, I think he actually maybe has more weapons. I mean, he had Plax, which was huge.
Plaxico Burress was prior to Odell
shooting
Beckham
himself.
Getting there and shooting himself in the leg, was the greatest wide receiver in Giants history.
Yeah.
I don't think that was even close. He was a dynamic wide receiver, and then he shot himself in the leg. At a nightclub. But yeah, I agree. I think that they have more weapons around Eli than they had in the past. And their secondary, I don't know what happened because their secondary was god awful last year. And Eli Apple, their rookie they got, and that, what is it, Collins, a kid out of Alabama, who was miserable at safety last year and had no hands, and everything that hit him in the hand seemed to bounce off and he would drop. And this year he is going to be a Pro Bowler. And right. So
he's an absolute man-child.
Yeah, I don't understand what's happening there. If HGH made you better at catching the football, I would think that he's taking HGH because I've never seen a turnaround like this where a guy who just cannot catch a ball all of a sudden has sticky fingers. It doesn't make sense to me. But I don't know. I think the Giants are going to be an interesting story moving forward. And that NFC East at the top of it is, I mean, I think Dallas is going
to
wrap
this
up.
Starting to look like contenders. Right. You know what I mean? The division for so long was kind of sputtering.
Yeah.
Besides the Cowboys. But, you know, with the Giants coming, even Washington kind of looks like they might even make, they could even potentially make a run into the wild card.
Yeah.
You know? I mean.
And Kirk Cousins, as much as I dislike his style of play, similar to Alex Smith.
Don't like that?
I hate checkdown quarterbacks. It's so brutal to watch. It is so brutal.
I feel like Cousins takes a lot more chances.
But he does this year. Yeah. And that Green Bay game, I believe it was, when he was just bombing the ball all over the field, that was fun to watch. So I've had to get off his case, even though I just argued with my friend.
But it's just not consistent enough. He doesn't do it on a regular basis.
Exactly. You know, and one thing you've noticed about, or I've noticed about him, is when that first read is not there, he's throwing the ball away or it's immediate checkdown. What I think separates elite quarterbacks in this league, elite pocket passers, is the ability to go one through four, even five in cases, and go through your reads and make the right pass. And what you see a lot with Kirk Cousins is, and granted, he's getting that hot read or hot route a lot because he has DeSean Jackson, he has Jordan Reed.
Pierre Garçon.
Garçon has been playing great. I mean, he's surrounded by weapons, not to mention Fat Rob out of the backfield. actually is a pretty good receiver out of the backfield, so he does have a lot of weapons. I just don't know that Kirk Cousins, if they get into the playoffs, is going to take you anywhere. I don't know. I just don't trust him. And again, I hate that style of football, so it's hard for me to sit here and commend anyone with that style. But I don't know. I think the NFC East is interesting between Dallas, the Giants, and the Redskins. Obviously, Dallas has the easiest road to wrap this thing up. I think they have a two-game lead, or is it? I believe it's a two-game lead. I'll pull that up right now. But
yeah, it's two.
Yeah, they're up two on the Giants. They'd have to drop both.
Yeah,
for the Giants to catch.
That's right. Okay, so
I'm hoping for a Giants Cowboys playoff game because I think it'd be cool to see them play a third time to see if the Cowboys can get
in
over
Jerry
that
World.
Hump. You know, because it's gonna. I mean, if you look at the way it looks like, New York's gonna get the five.
Who wins that game? Because Dak is starting at that point. You can't bench Dak to bring in Romo once you make playoffs. You got to stick with the rookie.
See, that's what we were talking about last. We were just having that discussion last week when Derek was in. It was like he kind of was saying that you should give Romo a couple starts right now since you have the one almost locked up. And I think, man, I don't know, that could send a weird message in the locker room.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I mean, it could create potentially what it did for Denver, you know, with Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler. Mm. You know, he came in for those seven games, you know, went, 7-1 or 7-2 or whatever it was, and ended up getting benched into the playoffs for Peyton Manning, which is great. Peyton Manning gets to go out on the sunset, but you know, look what it did. He had a lot of animosity. He ended up going, you know, $72 million to Houston, you know, and ditching out on Denver.
Very true.
Do you risk Dak getting upset and, you know, after his rookie contract's over, given, you know, the potential bird and moving on?
I feel like Dak's got a higher upside than Brock Osweiler.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that, I mean, now you're looking at that, and I think a lot of people were probably like, oh, man, good for Houston. Now Houston might be regretting that.
Right.
I mean, they benched him this week for Savage, who did pretty well.
You know, and they're still in the thick of, you know, their divisional race. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to talk about, like, changing horses in midstream, it's one thing to do it when you have nothing to play for.
Right.
And you might even be trying to drop a game or two or whatever, you know. But, like, so this is going to be interesting because I think if the Giants do get the five, then you're looking at them going on the road to either Atlanta or Detroit, you know. Possibly. I mean, if things kind of both very winnable games.
Yeah.
And then you have the potential where if the sixth seed doesn't win, whether that be the Redskins or Tampa Bay or what have you, Then that second round matchup, because they reseed, mm-hmm. lowest seed would play the one.
Right.
So all they'd have to do is win that one game.
Yeah.
There's a very likely chance that they play Dallas. I don't know if they can get it done twice in Big D. Three times in a season is really tough to beat someone.
Any team for that matter. Yeah. So we'll see. Going back to the whole Tony Romo, Dak Prescott thing, I do think there is a happy medium and a way to do this. And the way I would do it, the thing that we were talking about last week, before I finish my point here, the thing that I think we kind of glossed over and didn't give any credence to that I was thinking about right as we got done with the show is, I do think
Tony. Don't you love that when you have something good to say?
Yeah, right, yeah. And it was like the moment you and I like parted ways, I'm riding my bike home, I'm like, damn, oh, that's a great point. But they have more information than we do. We don't know how healthy Tony Romo is.
No,
he's been cleared, but none of us have seen him throw the ball in practice or drop back. And the last couple times we've seen him play, he's been carted off the field.
Yeah.
And we don't know. I mean, he's essentially missed 2 years, two full seasons of NFL football. And I don't think for anyone, it doesn't matter how great you are, I think that's asking a lot to come back from. And the Cowboys know more than we do, and I just don't know how healthy he is or how comfortable you'd feel putting him out there. But I do think the one thing the Cowboys can do where they don't destroy Dak's confidence and they get Tony Romo reps is bring him in the third quarter for some reps. And depending if the game becomes a blowout or you guys, the Cowboys, have the game in hand, let Tony Romo finish out the fourth, and you pitch it this way. Dak, we want to get you rest. We want to make sure you're going into the playoffs healthy.
Right.
We want to make sure that Tony's got some reps in case something does happen. You know, we got to look out for our best interest too.
I think that's Pandora's box that would be opening, to be honest with you, because there'd just be so many questions in the media. Like, and not that that's the media controls the demeanor of the locker room or whatever,
yeah.
but like there would just be too much like, okay, you know, are we risking injury? Do we really have full confidence in Dak? You know what I mean? Like, I think it's one of those things where you just have to trust that if you have to put Romo in there, that he's going to be ready to go based on his overall experience and, you know, 10 plus years in the league, you know, and of him being an everyday starter. Now, to your point about the injury,
mm-hmm.
I think this is a huge thing because I think that they could be protecting the asset in the chance that they want to trade him in the offseason.
Right.
Because you have, I mean, granted, he's getting
That's
up there.
Point.
He's
That's
like 35, 36
yet.
Years old or whatever.
Yeah.
But you might have a couple teams out there, like Jacksonville comes to mind, mm-hmm. you know, somewhere where, you know, it could be a good fit for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not saying he's going to turn the Jags around in one
sure.
season, but you'd be surprised. I mean, that could be a 3-win team that gets to like 7 or 8 with
yeah.
someone like Romo, and then you're a year or two away from being a playoff team.
Sure.
I mean, I think he's that good of a quarterback when healthy.
Yeah, I mean, and that's definitely a conversation that when we have a slow news day after the season, I would love to talk about potential
the Jacksonville
landing
Jaguars?
Spots. Well, no, just potential just landing spots for Tony Romo because right. there are a lot of teams that will be vying for him, I imagine. And there are a lot of teams that you can make the argument are just a quarterback away.
Yeah.
Denver comes to mind. I mean,
Denver's a huge candidate.
Yeah, look at what they did last
that's
year.
That's true because they still have a really good defense.
And, yeah. And you look at what they did last year and then look at the drop off with. And Trevor Siemian hasn't been just god-awful, but he's not very good.
No.
He's been obviously more of a stopgap kind of quarterback who's not going to make too many mistakes, but he's also the type of quarterback that if you get up 17 on him, you know the game's pretty much over because
right.
he doesn't throw down the field. Another one of these guys who doesn't throw the ball down the field, but it just drives you crazy. But Denver would be a potential landing spot. Kirk Cousins is going to demand a lot of money this offseason.
No doubt.
If I'm the Redskins, I'd rather just say, all right, go test the free agent waters. We'll bring in Tony. See you later. And he's familiar with the Cowboys and this and that. But
Dan Snyder loves throwing money around.
No doubt.
He'll pay him, especially if they make the playoffs and win a game. He'll give
would
him
Would Tony
money.
Go to the rival Redskins?
Well, that would be one thing Dan Snyder would love to do.
I mean, that would create some...
To stick it to
great.
Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
They would love to do that. An in-house, you know, in-division trade.
Oh, I would
I mean,
love to
be
see
like
that.
Bledsoe going to the Bills light.
Right, right,
know,
right, right.
The light version.
Romanowski from the Broncos to the Raiders.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly. So I don't know. I think that's definitely an interesting conversation.
There's a couple other teams too. The Jets,
You the Jets have a great, like, I mean, yeah, when you look at the talent on that team.
Yeah. Fitzpatrick probably won't be there next year.
Bryce Petty's going to be the guy. Yeah. He's one of those guys that's getting a look here down the stretch.
Geno's contract's up after this season, so.
I don't think he's the guy.
Yeah, and they could definitely be, that's a great point, John, they could be one of those teams that is a quarterback away.
Right.
And I think almost every team that has mediocre to poor quarterback play, another example, and I think he's under contract for another year or two, so I don't know how you'd make it work, but the Bengals, I think we've seen Andy Dalton's ceiling. We've seen that he's a fine regular season quarterback, but when it comes to the playoffs, and like we've discussed before on the show, the playoffs usually comes down to one or two guys that are exceptional, playing exceptional, and that's kind of been the Achilles heel of the...
I think that's a little unfair. To Dalton, because they're like 0-5 or something, but like the coach is 0-5 too, you know what I mean? And like last year they were pretty much two personal foul penalties away from beating Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Perfect just went crazy.
I mean, they both lost their minds.
Yeah,
I think him and Pac-Man too. Didn't they both get
went insane? Yeah,
and so like that made that field goal like almost a gimme, where it would have been like a 50 plus yarder. He might not have hit that,
right?
You know what I mean? Since Cincinnati could have gotten over that playoff hump. When you look at some of these, you know, they've had to go on the road a couple times to Houston, and it's just like, you know, yeah, they're 0-5, but I'm not necessarily, you know, I don't know. I think with Dalton and Green there, you know, they've got a higher ceiling than maybe you're giving them credit for.
Sure.
But I don't know. You know, you never know. Sometimes guys just can't get it done in the postseason. I mean, look at, like, I was thinking about the Chris Sale to the Red Sox thing. I was thinking about all the money they gave David Price. Not to get too off topic here or whatever, but like, you throw all this money at a guy who's never won a playoff game.
Right.
It's like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Like, okay, you might 18 wins in this regular season, but I need someone that can get it done in crunch time.
Sure.
And so I'd like to see Andy get a couple more chances at that, because I think he's a pretty darn good quarterback.
Yeah. To add to that, I mean, you know, I think it's more at this point. I feel like it's more on the head coaching for the Bengals. You know, Marvin Lewis is kind of looked at as that well renowned great coach, but it's kind of that you kind of just get lost and let him lose for a while and have these seasons where they're just one and done in the playoffs. And I mean, they have the talent. AJ Green, they have all the, you know, Bernard, they have all these guys that can get them to the next level. And I feel like come crunch time, you know, it's always Marvin Lewis slip up.
Yeah, and he's been there for, 11 years, I believe? So
yeah, he's one of the longer tenured coaches. Like, it's like him and Belichick.
Belichick's the only one who's been at the same place longer. Yeah. So, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bengals move off of Marvin Lewis after this year. And honestly, 11 years, no playoff wins, or do they have one? I think
no, they're 0-for, I think.
Yeah.
They lost. They were in once with Carson Palmer, and he got his knee rolled up on. And
that's
he
right.
Got taken out of the game.
That's
like
right.
The first drive. That was a potentially really good year for Cincinnati. It all kind of went. You can't blame anybody for the quarterback going out in the first drive.
Right.
But yeah, I think Marvin Lewis is like 0-for-8 in playoffs.
Yeah, it's not.
It's up there.
It's not
it's
a great
not good,
record, but
you know.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there.
But see, the thing is, when you're talking about a franchise like that, though, you have different sets of expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Like. Say, like, for, like, a Jerry Jones in Dallas, like, he's not going to be content unless they're a 12-win deep playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
And these 8 and 8 years, I'm sure, have just been killing them. But, like, if you're the Bengals or the Browns even, like, and you're consistently making the playoffs, like, you got to be happy with that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Let's not get Grady Cleveland.
That's what I mean. Why I think it's one of those things where, like, if you get rid of Marvin Lewis, well, it's like, well, what are you going to get in replacement of that?
Yeah.
Because at least this guy has been taking you to the playoffs. In a division that's been pretty tough.
Yeah.
And we've seen Baltimore and Pittsburgh both win Super Bowls in the last 5-6 years out of that division. Not an easy division. Granted, you have the Browns as the perennial doormat.
Sure.
But, I mean, for Marvin Lewis to at least have gotten them there, I think it's just one of those things where, like, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, you've got a different set of what you want to have accomplished. I mean, everybody's trying to win a Super Bowl. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, they're not the Patriots. They're not the Cowboys. You know what I mean? They just, right. you know, so I don't know. What does the fan base think? Do we take that next level? Do we get a coach that can be a difference maker and actually get us to the Super Bowl?
But I think that's kind of the problem with fan bases driving any decisions, right?
No, they shouldn't.
Is that, you know, I think it's Warren Buffett who said happiness is a function of managing expectations.
Right.
And I think Cincinnati's at that point where, yeah, they should understand where they are in NFL history and be happy that they're even relevant year in and year out. But I don't think that's how many of the fan base, people in that fan base are going to look at it, nor probably the GM or owners. This is FM 90.1 KZFR, listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills and beyond. Thanks for listening. We're going to go to break real quick. This is something that I discussed with Derek that we wanted to do a couple weeks ago just to kind of break up the show, give us a moment to think about what the hell it is we're talking about here. And something fun for you. Noobs, how old are you?
39.
I'm 31. John, yourself?
27.
And when Derek's here, he's the youngest of us all, but he at heart is an old crotchety man. So this comes courtesy of ESPN, the Dan Levitard Show. This is Greg Cody's Back in My Day. I think this is something you guys will enjoy, and it gives us a moment to not talk. If I can get this going here.
Father blurted, who the bleep was that?
After doing it with him.
Lil Wayne was sitting next to my father, rapping with him, looking at him like he was a Disney character, smiling with diamonds in his teeth at my father.
That's amazing.
Sorry for interrupting you, Cody. Yeah.
Coffee! I remember back in my day when strolling into your local coffee shop and ordering a cup of Joe was pretty simple. You ordered it black or with cream and sugar, slapped a buck on the counter, and sauntered out with a contented grin to meet the day. When did walking into that coffee shop become such an ordeal? Like many of America's problems, this one is rooted in a common theme, too much variety. Nowadays, there's barely room for the word coffee on the drink menu. At Dunkin' Donuts, it's crowded out by latte, cafe con leche, macchiato, cappuccino, dunkachino, frozen coffee colada, and about a dozen other drinks all trying to slam the old-fashioned coffee cup on the terrazzo and laugh as it shatters. And of course, you can get any of these bizarre aberrations in various nauseating flavors like pumpkin. I'm in my Double D yesterday. I say, large coffee, please, and the gal behind the counter says, iced or hot? I recoiled. Let me give you a quick tutorial, I boomed. The day hot is not the default assumption for the word coffee is the day I drive over a cliff like Thelma and Louise. My dear, I would no sooner ask you for an iced coffee than I would sit down at Ruth's Chris and ask the waiter to serve me a frozen steak. At that point, the gal behind the counter was near tears, and I was politely asked to leave. So I drove to my local Starbucks, where the drink menu is even more absurd, and I can't even order a large coffee because small is tall, medium is grande, and large is venti. Pretentious much? The woman and man in front of me ordered a chestnut praline frappuccino. Uncontrollably, I muttered, crappuccino was more like it under my breath. But I don't think they heard me because they were too busy talking about buying a new outfit for their Jack Russell. Nobody in that Starbucks was ordering a regular coffee but me. I felt as if I'd walked into Neiman Marcus and asked where I could find a pair of dungarees and a straw hat. The clerk asked me my name to write on the cup. Exasperated, I told her. Wait, I'm sorry, she wasn't a clerk. My bad, she was a barista. Get back to a regular cup of coffee, America. Buy a blue can of Maxwell House. Don't worry whether the beans were picked by a kid making 4 cents a week. Pour that rich blackness in a heavy mug and then exult in your simple celebration of Americana as you pour that hot Java down your gullet. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
Good times to be had there.
That was hilarious.
I just love it because I just think that's such a good fit for who we are as a show, even though we're all kind of younger guys.
I'm crotchety as hell.
Yeah, I am too, man.
I've definitely got a big get off my lawn streak.
I noticed it start to kick in right about the time I hit 26, 27, yeah. And I started complaining about the music kids listen to and this and that, and I was like, oh my God, I'm that guy.
Yeah.
But
that sounds about right. Yeah, 27.
Nothing's ever as good as it was in your generation.
Never.
You know, the Star Wars movies.
But I always felt like I was born in the wrong generation.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think I would have done pretty good about 100 years ago.
Yeah, see, for me being half black, there was never a good time in history to really back to. So if anything, if I could time travel, I'd go ahead.
Go future, yeah, that might be, yeah.
See how we're rocking out in the future.
I don't know. I guess there must have been some times, right? Egypt, Mesopotamia, you guys were on top.
There's probably times where it wasn't all bad. But yeah. I'm thinking in American history.
In American history.
I don't really want to go backwards.
Definitely not.
Even though the way my facial hair grows is in natural chops, and I would have crushed in the 70s. And then the 80s, I could have rocked the Jerry Curl. Yeah. So I did miss out on some things. But
you can always bring it back.
Yep. Everything's being redone now.
Everything's cyclical, right?
Yeah, I guess I could be a Renaissance man in that fashion.
You Terminator there?
I mean, I'm loving what Cap's doing with his hair, man.
Oh, man, I do, too.
It looks good, too.
You know what?
Some guys can pull it off.
Do you think he has less, air in it, though? I mean, I don't get the size. I mean, you see how he just, folds it back perfectly.
It's great.
Oh, man.
It's great. I love it. I dig it. I did want to mention this real quick, because this is just something I was thinking about the other day when I saw they did the award for Sportsman of the Year, and they gave it to LeBron. And they had Jay-Z on stage talking about Posse and the whole Phil Jackson thing. That's not what I wanted to discuss so much because I feel like it's been talked to death. But I thought that if Sports Illustrated really wanted to make a splash and have a lot of people talking about this Sportsman of the Year award, that Kaepernick would have been a good selection. And the reason being is because I don't think anyone in the sporting world in the last 10 years has transcended sports in the way that Kaepernick has. As far as, I mean, he was on the cover of Time. You know, I mean, everything from the beginning of the season, from this preseason to the first month or so, it didn't matter what news outlet you were watching. At some point, they had talking heads discussing Kaepernick's stance on kneeling during the national anthem. And I just thought that, you know, for Sports Illustrated, look, magazines and print in general just isn't consumed the way it once was. And so they need to think of new and creative ways to stay relevant.
No doubt.
And, you know, web-based subscriptions is a hard thing to sell because you get free news everywhere else. And so I thought that Sports Illustrated would have done themselves a favor, potentially making Kaepernick their Sportsman of the Year, just because I really don't think that anyone has done what he's done in the as far as to make an actual difference. And look, like,
culturally, nobody has even come close, at least not that I can think of off the top of my head. You know, but I think the problem is that there's so much fear out there that they're going to lose readership. You know what I mean? If they put someone like on, because he's, you know, controversial.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? If you really understand the First Amendment and you really get what it's all about, to me, it's not controversial at all.
I couldn't agree with you more, but a lot of people
don't really get what the whole, they're like, they're talking about this flag, like it's this thing that's like just to be revered and respected so much, when really that's just a symbol of the freedoms that we have.
Right.
And the number one freedom is freedom of speech.
Right.
So kneeling during the national anthem, I think, is a beautiful thing, especially with all the injustices that are still happening every day in America here in 2016, mm-hmm. going on 2017. I mean, this is something like it's not over and done with.
No.
The civil rights movement is something that is alive and well, and mm-hmm. really it's one of those struggles that's never going to go away. It's something that people need to be like on point with all the time, whether it's racism, sexism, ageism, whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's something that people need to stay vigilant about.
Yeah,
and attention needs to be placed on it, because like I think there's this sense, you know, that like, you know, now that the 60s and 70s are over, they're like, okay, everybody can vote and this, and we have certain basic things,
so we're good.
But also, we're good.
You're right.
But we're not good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When kids, like, you know, young men, 12 years old in the park in Cleveland are getting shot.
Right.
For holding something that looks like a gun. I mean, just this reactionary policing that's happening.
Yep.
It's disproportionately affecting people of color. You know, drug sentencing, disproportionate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can go on and on and on and on about this. So I agree with you 100%. I think Cap would have been a fantastic choice, especially because this year with what's going on, I mean, like, he clearly, to me, was the one that's made the most impact and has gotten the most conversations started.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so to take the opportunity to put someone on the cover like that, when it's not just about what was done on the court or on the field or on the rink,
yeah,
you know, I think this was definitely a missed opportunity.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the one thing that you mentioned about him getting the conversation started, I was going back and forth with a buddy of mine who said, look, like, I commend Cap for what he did, what he's doing, but really at the end of the day, it's just all talk. First of all, no, it's not, because he's donated his money and time to the cause that he supports. And in addition to that, let's not underrate or devalue conversation, because right. This wasn't a conversation that we were having in the mainstream. Mainly the conversation was whenever it was one of these incidents where predominantly white officer killing, you know, young, oftentimes unarmed black males, usually we were just going into, was that officer correct, not correct, blah, blah, blah. And we get someone from the right, someone from the left, a black guy, a white guy, and they just yell at each other. And I think for the first time in a long time, Kaepernick got a lot of people to have an open dialogue about these things. And I thought the way that veterans poured out to share their either support or go the other way against what Kaepernick was doing was incredibly interesting and telling. And it was just the value of conversation. I think so often, somehow I got off on a tangent here, but I think the value of just moderate debate is something that this country has gotten so far away from. And it's always, you know, if you're progressive, you got to be progressive. If you're conservative, you got to be conservative. And that's, you're just got to line up with those guys on the left and the guys on the right. And I thought Kaepernick, by bringing this conversation about, put a lot of us in, forced a lot of us to have uncomfortable conversations, which leads to change. Eventually, I don't think we're going to see the ramifications of this next year or the year after that, but I think years down the line, there's a potential that what Kaepernick's doing will lead to something greater. And we'll see. I mean,
well, he's at least going to be a hero for a lot of young men and women.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because I think people are going to remember him 15, 20 years down the line as, like, not just the guy who had that incredible lightning-like season with the Niners,
right,
was 2 yards away from winning it all, but some guy who actually stood up for his community and for, you know, everybody. You know, he's standing up for all Americans, I look at, you know,
yeah,
I mean, white, black, whatever, you know. And so I think that 20 years down the line, this is how I'm going to remember him anyway. You know what I mean? I'm, like I just said, I'm 39, I'm a little bit older, I'm a little bit more jaded as far as my heroes.
Sure, sure.
You know what I mean? But, like, I think young kids are going to look at him as, like, man, this guy really took a stand. And to your point earlier about the money, yeah, he's made a lot of money in football, but he's endangering future earnings.
Yeah.
Because there might be, you know, endorsements. There might be companies that are going to shy away from him in the future. There might be teams, like, whenever this contract is up, no, there might be teams that don't want to sign him.
Right.
Just based on this.
Yeah, even they just don't want to deal with it.
They just don't want to deal with it, even if they're in dire need of a really good backup or even starter. I mean, he showed some flashes this year where I was like, man, he still has it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sometimes when he was throwing the ball, it looked really, really bad. But
yeah, but
you know what I mean? But
there,
like,
were flashes there.
Where, like,
yeah,
you know, there was a couple times I think he ran for over 100 yards in one of those games, had 3 touchdowns, like against Miami too, like a pretty good team.
Yeah,
like,
he threw for 3 and ran for 1 or something like that.
I
yeah,
mean, if you look at a lot of these teams, you know what I mean? I could name probably 5 or 6, maybe even 10 teams where he would be the starter.
Yeah, agreed.
You know what I mean?
Agreed. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully he does find a landing spot. I just don't know what you would do with this team, because they're god-awful. This, I mean, again, I'm close to it. I root for those guys, but so maybe I'm too close. But this is one of, if not the worst defense I've ever seen. I mean, it doesn't even look like they're trying. And I don't ever want to accuse professional athletes of quitting.
Right.
But, I mean, in that game yesterday, when they're down 21-0, everyone in the stadium knew it was over. Atlanta knew it was over.
Yeah.
Everyone on the Niners side of the field knew it was over.
Yeah.
And not because the offense wouldn't possibly be able to muster a comeback, but because the defense would not be able to stop them all day.
Right.
And so it's just, I mean, man, that's going to be an interesting offseason. I think I anticipate that team to look completely different next year, and they're going to have to pretty much strip down everything and start over, because what are their assets that they have to work with?
Oh, they got nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, they have, I mean, what?
Carlos Hyde.
Carlos Hyde.
That's the only person I would keep on that squad.
Yeah. Eric Reed is good.
Yeah, they're safe. Yeah. They have a couple defensive spots that they could kind of keep around but,
I feel like Curley had some flashes too.
Sure.
In the slot position.
But it's Jeremy Curley. He's not a dynamic wide receiver.
They're a very hard football team to watch.
I just don't know. I mean, how long is this Chip Kelly experiment going to go on? Is there going to be a big-time opening in the Pac-12, and he's going to jump all over that?
He wants to stay in the NFL, so...
Oh, he wants to. Mm-hmm. And he definitely, this isn't a situation where, Nick Saban, 2 years in Miami, I failed, I'm going back to college. I mean, he wants to prove a point that his system can work in the pros. I don't think it can, you know what I mean? But I'm not, then again, I'm not a personnel guy. I just know that when you're trying to run 80 plays for the sake of running 80 plays as opposed to running 60 a little bit more efficiently. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And plus, you speak about the defense. He's not doing his defense any favors when all they're trying to do is, pace on offense, and you go 3 and out. And you know what I mean? You have to sustain these drives.
Agreed.
If you're going to give your defense a rest. If the defense is on the field 35, 40 minutes a game, they're doomed.
Oh, absolutely. So, and that's for any defense in the league for the most part. So,
It's going to be a high draft pick. I guess that's the one thing to look forward to.
I suppose.
But even this draft, there's nothing really that you would see throwing a season for. Let's lose the rest of the game. There's no one. Right. I mean, besides what the defensive end from Texas A&M. Miles Jarrett.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
That's probably about the only person I could see you really wanting to go after in this draft. I mean, other than that, there's no
Andrew Luck. Or,
there's no deciding factor that's going to change your franchise that you can build on.
Which, honestly, I think would be a good thing for the Niners, because I don't think they need to go and get dynamic skill positions. They need to build this thing up from the ground up. I would start and just start building a line.
Yeah.
Because they just, I mean, besides Joe Staley on offense, they have nothing. And I really don't, we only have 10 minutes left. I don't want to talk about the Niners. It's depressing. The holidays are around the corner. But I think they just need to start with rebuilding that entire team. Try to get, you don't need to
start over.
Yeah, I wouldn't try. And I mean, obviously you get the best player available to you, but I don't think I would necessarily get out there and look for the most dynamic wide receiver or this or that. I think I would just start by
maybe even trade away the second pick overall.
Yeah, and get a few pieces.
Exactly,
yeah, because they're starved for some talent. But real quick, if we could, and maybe we go into this more next week, because I want to get to a couple goofy things that are a little bit more fun. But baseball recently collectively bargained that the owners will be able to get MRIs on all players entering the draft. And I'm shocked, because the baseball has the strongest union out of all the professional sports. And I don't see how this is of any benefit whatsoever to the players. If anything, this is just taking money out of their pocket. So I'm really surprised it went through. I think that there's some points I want to make on this when we have more time at a later date, but I just think this sets a bad precedent for other leagues, because the NBA is trying to collectively bargain using wearables for their guys, which tracks your sleep and how much you work out and eat and this and all these things. And obviously you can't make a one-to-one comparison, because I would hate if my boss put a tracker on me to see how productive I was or how many times I checked my phone during the day and stuff like that. And obviously not a one-to-one comparison, but still, I'm really surprised that went through. And I just wonder how, the baseball's union didn't strike this down, because I wonder what spin they put on this to get the union to okay this, because I don't see what the benefit is to players.
Yeah, I'm sure that they probably, just in negotiating, they probably got something else on some other issue.
That just seems like a huge thing to give up, though. That
but
seems
you're just,
incredibly
you're just
invasive.
Talking about medical records, right? An
MRI?
An
MRI is when you get the full scan.
Radial imaging, or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, you would think that they would be putting it in place for player safety, or they would want player safety, but the only thing it would really be able to do for management or ownership is just be able to give you less money. I mean, if you don't, you could come up with, variable A or B
exactly.
of why you have this problem and why it could be maybe a factor down the road, so we're only going to give you this amount.
But if you're investing the kind of money that they are in a player, though, I mean, really, I guess from management's perspective, I think it's a good thing. I mean, I would want to do that. I would want to know
from management,
everything
makes,
I could possibly know.
It makes all the
about it, my potential investment.
It makes all the sense for management. Yeah. But from the player's perspective, I mean, let's just put it this way. No GM's going to look at an MRI and go, wow, that elbow looks amazing. Let's get this left-handed pitcher and pay him more than he deserves. It's right. going to go the opposite right, way right. 9 out of 10 times.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, he's got this in the elbow, and that doesn't necessarily mean anything will ever happen from it. But it could,
yeah.
And it's definitely going to hurt some dollars. So I want to get a little bit more into that next week because there's an interesting article that I've saved. And so when we have slower times, we could talk about that. Go ahead.
Getting back to the basketball thing – like tracking players, is that just an idea or is this actually being talked about?
So the San Antonio Spurs did this from 3, 4, 5 years ago. But this was a voluntary thing. And I think it's a lot different when you have Pop coming to his players who's right. earned trust and respect from his guys
yeah.
than, you know, a brand new coach. And he basically said, look, this is for your betterment. We want to understand your health better. And so track their sleep, their workouts, how much they are walking in a day, what times they're eating, all mm-hmm. these things. And this had kind of led to the San Antonio Spurs invested millions in getting – they're the first NBA team to get a sports science department.
Okay.
And so hence how, you know, they started this trend of resting players. And it was based off research their sports science department huh. gave them and said, you know, if you fly X amount of miles, you know, it does this to the body.
Right.
Your guys over the age of 30, their bodies – you know, recover incrementally slower than, you know, a guy in his early 20s. So so they've used it to their advantage and to the advantage of the players there. But more, I don't know that more information about health, I mean, see, if we knew what J.R. Smith was up to.
See, that's what I mean. Like,
not
I mean,
wearing a shirt.
This is a slippery slope towards like Orwellian panoptic surveillance, you know what I mean? Like watching a player all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is it going to get into like, there's going to be a little voice that comes in and says, ah, you better eat your green beans.
Or, right.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's creepy.
Because it is creepy. It's very 1984-esque. And it's
it
like,
is.
where do you draw the line? I mean, because they are paying these guys a lot of money, but it's like they still have their personal time.
Mm-hmm.
They practice, they go to the games, they have training camp, all that stuff. How much further out of that team activity realm do you surveil, you
right.
know what I mean, and how much right do you have when you're paying a guy $120 million to
right.
tell him when to sleep, when not to sleep, how much to eat, what to eat, when to eat, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Can you imagine a Michael Jordan in this day and age? Because he was in toys,
he's in casinos,
yeah.
yeah, I mean, smoking cigars,
yeah,
I mean, you know
he
what
would
I mean,
be drinking the night before,
right?
There's so many famous stories of Michael Jordan doing off the wall stuff, playing a full 18 rounds of golf before a game,
yeah.
type of things. And you know, clearly didn't seem to really affect his performance. Now, had he taken better care of himself? Could he have stretched out a few more years? Who knows? But the fact of the matter is, I see how this could help players in, okay, we understand our bodies a bit more.
Right.
We understand when we need to get rest, but like you said, with the whole Orwellian thing, like how close are we going to get till we're yeah. monitoring players, like,
controlling every aspect?
Yeah, you can't go out past 10 p.m.
Yeah.
You know, no more fraternizing with women, which would never happen
right.
in any professional sport. But I think we're on the same page there that this is a slippery slope.
Well, and two, the science of it isn't always necessarily going to give you the best results, because it might tell you, okay, this is like what's going on with you. But there's that X factor, if you will, the you know, the variable that you can't really measure, and that's like mental health.
Right.
Like maybe a guy needs to be out in the casino till 4 a.m. getting hammered. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, because that's his mental
that's
health
his vice,
day.
Yeah.
That's his vice. And if he doesn't get to do that, he's going to perform not as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do find it funny. Harvard recently came out with the study that showed of all the players, the guy who plays the worst on Sunday afternoons, no surprise, J.R. Smith.
Ah.
So I just found that to be that's
there's
the one guy.
Correlation
who,
there.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to be like, here, wear this little Fitbit. He's like, I'm good. Does it measure how much Hennessy I drink?
Right.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'll yeah. wear one then.
Right.
You know what
I would
mean?
Imagine J.R. Smith would put it on his dog or something, you know, and let him like.
I don't know. I find that all very funny. Real quick, I guess we have 2 more weeks. But I just want all the listeners out there, let's all root for this one thing. Let's root for Cleveland to go 0-16, because I really think the idea of them throwing a parade for an 0-16 season is so awesome. It is just so great, and I really, really hope it happens. Because look, like they got their championship this year.
They did.
So let's have fun with it. Now the pressure's off. You know, let's have fun.
They won the basketball, and they came, you know, within, you know, one game of winning the World Series, first of what had been for them in 68 years.
Right.
They're like, you know, the city is actually tasting some success.
Yeah.
So I think maybe, I guess it would be funny, but it's like celebrating not even just mediocrity, but like horribleness.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the way you want to go.
No, but I think, you know, it's hilarious. And no, I don't root for the Browns, so it's great.
I don't know. To me, that would be sending the wrong message to the community.
Agreed. That's why I root for these things. I am all about
it. Is this a serious thing? The mayor's talked about this? I mean, what?
No, but so they got the funding. They got the parade permits now. So they had a GoFundMe campaign. They got the money.
Who's they, though? The Browns? Or
no,
a group of fan base members.
Yeah.
Okay. But if this was in any way sanctioned by the club, then you would have to start asking questions of like competitive integrity.
No. That's not the case. The club has nothing to do with this. Former players, however, have been asked to participate.
I would hope the club would want nothing to do with this.
Former players have been asked to participate in the parade, and many of whom have said yes so far. Okay. So I would love to see Tim
Only
Couch on a float in Cleveland celebrating 0-16.
Just freezing tundra, really snowy.
You know, Johnny Manziel got the last win as the last starting quarterback to get a win.
That is the coolest thing I've heard all week.
Yeah, yeah, I just saw that.
That is the best.
On Instagram.
I feel like that's just irony at its best.
It's great. Wow. Well, I think ending it on a light note like that is that's acceptable. Thanks for listening and talking about practice. We will be back next week at 5:30 p.m. as we are every Monday. John, thank you for filling in.
Thank